Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge Yards Aero, and this is the night sky. I've got that woman with me as well. What's her name? Kay. Hello, Kay. Say hello.
Hello.
And that other weird and wonderful guy, Keith.
Yeah. Hello, folks. How are you?
So they're going to be joining me in discussing the night sky. And always at the beginning of this programme, we always like to thank Dan Broughton, who sponsors it. And it's lovely to be able to get science over to the ordinary members of the public, what it's all about. Anyway, first of all, I always start off by talking about what's happening out at Stonehenge. Where at the moment, we're open from Wednesday to Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Right? And
Wednesday to Sunday, you haven't changed it. Richard?
Yes, I get told off. Yeah, I was looking for that. I thought there's something I've got to change on there. Yeah, Wednesday to Sunday, all right, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. But in addition to that, we do guided tours where you get someone like me take you around and tell you all the stories from antiquity. Mm. And the other thing is that we do, of course, is Star Treks. These are in the evening, obviously. And if the sky is clear, what we do is we take you around and pick out all the stars and constellations in the sky at the time. But all of these things have to be booked. So if you're interested in it for yourself or for a group, just give us a call. All right. Anyway, turning to our night sky, and what I've brought up for people watching this on TV as we're looking at the night sky, around about 10 o'clock in the evening. And the Southern Cross, or Crux as it's called by astronomers, reaches it's just about its highest point in the sky. Right? And the Southern Cross is famous because it is this navigational beacon that we use. Now, the Southern Cross points to another star called Achernar. And it's dead easy to pick because it's the only bright star in that region of the sky. And come halfway in between the two, with just the horizon, you're looking at the South Celestial Pole. Now, that's the point around which the entire heavens appears to rotate. And if you drop from the horizon there, from that spot, you're looking due south. Now, I just said that all the entire heavens rotates around that spot. So the Southern Cross is its highest point, but over the year it slowly travels around that spot, gets low in the south, and then it rises up again, all right? Because it's a number of degrees from the horizon, less than 41 degrees, which is our latitude, which means that it never sets from here. Anything beyond 41 degrees rises or sets.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called circumpolar because it circles the pole.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Mm.
It's rather like, if you can imagine, the hour hand of a 24-hour clock circling around the South Celestial Pole.
That's right. Yeah. And the point is, that's always what I immediately do if I'm anywhere trying to locate myself, is first of all, find the Southern Cross. If the sky is clear, the Southern Cross will be there, and then you can look for Achernar, and you find the South Celestial Pole, that gives you your bearings. You're looking due south then, all right?
Yeah.
So that's the way in which that works. Turning round, right in the autumn sky, turning round to the north, we're looking away from the Milky Way, and I guess the most prominent object is a constellation or pattern of stars is the Sickle. And there it is there. And the importance of the Sickle, it does indeed look like a bit like a sickle when you see the pattern of stars there. But thousands of years ago, when this group of stars rose up in the dawn sky, it was a time to bring in the harvest. Mm-hmm. So it marked the harvest, the autumn harvest in the northern hemisphere, the rising of that star.
It shows you just how imaginative we humans are.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, I always say to people that because we live in a world of technology, we tend to forget what it would be like if you didn't have all that information at your fingertips. No?
Well, that harvest kept you going all winter.
Yeah.
If you didn't have a harvest, you died.
Yeah.
Or you had to raid somebody else.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Mm. But you had to know when the time was to do that and all that sort of thing, so it's not as easy as you think, you know. Yeah. So there. That's the old bygone days when there was no cell phones where you could dial up and find out what this was, exactly, what the date was, and when to do this and when to do that. People use the stars as the great clock in the sky, rising and setting, telling them what
a
to do.
A clock and a calendar.
And of course, the great calendar in the sky also was the moon. That's where the word month comes from. It's a month.
A month, yes.
And the cycle of the moon is all to do with the weeks and so on and so forth, which incidentally, most people still use to this day. So anyway, that's what the sickle was all about, the harvest there. And the brightest star, which is on the handle of the sickle, is the star Regulus. And Regulus is the heart of the lion. There is Leo in the sky. Upside down, because all these figures were put together in the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
And so down here, everything appears to be upside down. Okay, well, let's go through it. That's me flicking. There we are. Right, so what I thought we'd do today is do a little bit of a tour of the bright autumn stars. Because when we look up at the night sky and you see this star, it's just a point of light. But what are they? Well, the stars themselves are suns. Not all the stars are like our sun. They vary enormously in size, mass, age, and so on and so forth. Mm. And each of those stars that we look out there has almost certainly got its own system of planets, right?
Yeah.
And remember, there's almost 200,000 million stars in our galaxy, which is only one of billions of other galaxies, and each going around them a world. So we're just on the stepping stone at the moment of discovering these things. Just as I guess 2 years ago, if people said there are planets around other stars, like our sun, you say, yeah, we think there are, but we couldn't prove it. We didn't have the technology. That's all changed now.
Yes. Well, now, of course, we have the James Webb telescope actively looking for stars with other planets. Yeah, other stars, rather, with exoplanets, they're called, in orbit around those stars.
And they've now got... they've got defined over several thousands of planets.
Yeah.
So there you are. Just about everything you can imagine must be out there somewhere. Okay. So let's have a look at Leo in Regulus. There he is. There, we start off with Regulus. And of all the stars in the sky, Regulus is the 21st brightest. Right? There are 20 stars in the sky brighter than that. And I've just pulled up a photograph of it. And what the immediate thing you notice is its colour. Well, our sun's a yellow star, this is a blue star.
It's a blue giant.
Yes. And the reason is that the temperature of a star determines its colour, right? So red and orange stars are cooler than our sun, white and blue stars are hotter, right?
Yeah.
But your eyes are not very good at detecting colour when the light gets low. Our eyes work with two cells, rods and cones, and... the cones give us colour vision, the rods give us black and white vision, but the rods are much more sensitive, okay? So when the light level drops down low, the cones, most of them stop working in your eye, so you don't see any colour, so everything looks white.
Yes.
So you see black and white at night, right?
Yeah.
But if you look through a large telescope of a star, suddenly you realise, hey, or you photograph them, you begin to see the colours, which is all related to the temperature. So this star here, being blue, is considerably hotter than the surface, is considerably hotter than our sun. Right? Its distance from the Earth, look at this number, 79.3 light years. We never used to be able to do that a little while ago, didn't we, was it? To say point this.
Yes.
And now they're measuring the distance of many stars down to a hundredth of a light year, you know. Yeah.
That's quite a feat when you think of it. Now, here we are, we're stuck on planet Earth. We can't exactly walk out there with a metre stick and say, yeah, that's
speak for yourself.
Yes, it's done very, very intricate measurements through telescopes in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're getting all this precise data coming through. So as I say... almost 80 light years away. And once we've taken this, we can then work out that it's 341 times brighter than the sun.
Right? Yeah. So some of that's not light you can see with your eyes.
No, a lot of that is in the UV Because the hotter the star, the more blue light it's giving off, but also the more UV it's giving off.
So you're not, you know, when you look at it, you're not seeing all the radiation coming from it.
Yeah, that's right. So, well, we'll have a closer look at it, all right? And this is not a photograph, folks. This is a portrayal by me of what this star would look like from a planet, all right? And it's got this weird shape. It's like a great big lens. And the reason for that is it's rotating very, very fast, right? Our sun rotates on its axis in 27 days, right? This star, which is much more massive and larger, rotates in just under 16 hours.
That's about the same time as Jupiter, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Similar to Jupiter.
Jupiter's about 9 point something hours.
Is it? Yeah. Yes. So it's a little bit slower, but, yeah. I mean, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a massive star, which is several...
Yeah, it's pretty fast.
Several thousand times bigger than Jupiter. That is very quick.
That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, so that if you were there and you're on a planet, of course, you'd be in... expect on the equator of that, like we are on our equator of our star, the sun, and so you'd see this lens shape. However, something you would soon begin to notice after a while, if you had any astronomers there, I'm not for a moment suggesting that life lives out there, but it's not a single star, actually. It's actually a multiple star system, right? It's actually four stars there. Our eyes are always caught by the brightest object, that big, brilliant one. But there's four other stars there. There's one there. I've just picked it out, okay? And this star, well, is about the same brightness as our sun, right? And it orbits around the brightest star in a period of 40 days, right? You've got that one. And then further away, you've got a orange star and a red dwarf, right, out there.
And these are all gravitationally locked.
Yes, yeah. Those two stars I just brought up are orbiting around each other, and its distance from the other is 4,200 light year, 200 astronomical units. Mm. An astronomical unit is the distance between the Earth and the Sun, right? It's just a measurement that astronomers use. Yes. So if you were measuring the distance of these stars from regulars, it'd be 4,200 times further away from the Earth is from the Sun. Mm. So that's how that works. Okay.
Now, these measurements of distance, by the way, it's rather convenient. Like, sometimes we measure things in centimetres and sometimes we measure things in kilometres. It depends on the scale of the distance we want to measure. So we have light years, which we use to measure the distance between the stars, and we have astronomical units, which we use for... makes it more convenient to use those for smaller measurements.
Well, we can imagine. If I say to you something is... 3 astronomical units away, you immediately know it's 3 times the distance the Earth is from the Sun.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. When you get up to 4,200, it gets a bit hard to imagine.
That's right, yeah.
It's just a long, long way away, isn't
That's
it?
That's right, yeah. But anyway, we have to bear in mind that this is all, they're all very young, all right? The stars themselves, the bigger a star is, the shorter its life expectancy, all right? And so we know that things like Regulus and obviously all the other stars, the other three stars which are orbiting around it, are all very, very young. Right? However, so that's Regulus. Now, also in the sky, to looking towards the west, we've got the two dog stars, Sirius and Procyon. Sirius is the brightest star in the sky, so anything brighter than Sirius is no star. And right now in our sky, of course, we have Jupiter, which outshines it and so on. But Sirius is the brightest star. And then you've got Poseidon, which is the eighth star. Now, I'm calling these the dog stars. Right? The reason for them is that Sirius is the brightest star in Canis Major, the great dog. And Poseidon is the brightest star in Canis Minor, the lesser dog. And these are the two hunting dogs that follow Orion around the sky, the hunter, Orion the hunter.
Yeah.
Now, Orion's just about set by this time, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I imagine these two dogs trotting along, following Orion, their master, through the sky.
Yes. You'll find that when Orion's in the sky, it's dead easy to pick out the great triangle between that and Orion. Okay, so those are those two bright stars there. So we'd better have a look at Sirius first of all. I've got an actual photograph taken. Again, you can see it's got a bluish colour, not as bright, as much blue as the one before it. And it's only 8.7 light years away. Remember, Regulus was hundreds of light years away, wasn't it? So Sirius is one of our neighbours, all right, at 8.7 light years. And it is just under 25 times brighter than the Sun. And so it's a roasting hot star. But again, just like Regulus, it's not a single star. It has got a companion. And this wasn't discovered until the invention of the telescopes and so on. And there it is there. And we call that star the pup.
Yes.
So you've got the dog star and the pup, right?
Yeah.
But the amazing thing is that when they looked at this star, we had this star which was as hot, hotter than the Sun, but it seemed to be thousands of times fainter. So let's have a look. It orbits around the big star in a period of 50 years, right? And they'll also put up their astronomical units. Its distance from Sirius ranges from about 8 to 32 astronomical units. But this is the pup is an amazing object, right? It's faint. It's only 1/40th the brightness of the Sun, right? But its mass is slightly larger. But it's got a diameter of only 1/125th that of the Sun. In other words, it's about the size of the Earth, but it's got as much mass as the Sun, right?
So it's whatever it is, it's a very dense object.
It is. Exactly. And we now know that it's what we call a white dwarf.
Yeah.
And it is, in fact, the relic of a much brighter star. When a star dies, right, its outer layers get ejected out, and what is left is the core of the star. So this is the relic of a much brighter star.
Yes. So what you're looking at is the core of a star that blew it all its outer layers off.
That's right.
Yes.
So once upon a time, what we call Sirius in our sky would have been outshone by another star, which was much brighter,
yeah,
right? Because as I mentioned earlier, the brighter a star, the quicker it evolves. Mm. So that's how it used to be. And the pup is slowly cooling down. And of course, eventually it's going to go cold and hard, but don't think for going a walk on it. I think I worked out that the average person, if they stood on the pup, once it's cooled down, would weigh about 10,000 tonnes.
So, yeah. You wouldn't survive.
No, you'd be flattened over the area size of a football field quite rapidly.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the pub. And this was the first white dwarf, which is essentially a stellar corpse.
Mm.
That's what we're looking at, right? The age of the Sirius system, right, is just 228 million years. Now, for some of you, this might sound a long time for you, but I tell you what.
The Sun's a lot older than that.
The Sun's 4.5 billion years old. This is a pretty young star, okay? Yeah. So it was formed before the dinosaurs were on the Earth, but around about the time of the coal age, when the great coal swamps were on.
Is there any sign of the... Because it probably supernovaed the pup, you know.
Well, not necessarily.
Is there any sign of its,
no,
it's probably, mass going out and affecting
no,
things?
No, it probably wasn't a supernova. It was probably just
collapsed
pulsating and the outer layers were thrown off, right? Because normally when a star explodes as a supernova, what we end up with is a neutron star. Right?
Oh, okay. So
its mass probably wouldn't have been that large to do that.
A neutron star is much more intense than a smaller and more intense star.
So its outer layers are just part of the local nebula.
Yeah, yeah.
Clouds of dust and gas.
Now I've brought up a photograph of Procyon, and it's a little bit cooler. It's hotter than the Sun, but cooler than Sirius. All right? But it's a sort of whitish colour star. And it is the eighth brightest star in the sky, right? And its distance from us, again, it's a nearby star. It's only 11.5 light years away. Mm. Right? So it's it's a neighbour of the Sun. And here's what I think it would look like. Right? It's 7 times brighter than the Sun. Right? Its diameter is twice as large. Right? But again here, Poseidon has also got a companion there, which is a white dwarf. So here we've got another binary system like Sirius, in which the brighter star has petered out and died, yes, and just left behind the white dwarf.
So in other words, both the dog stars have pups.
They both do, indeed, yes. All right. There you are, I've just brought up the information. It orbits around the bright star in a period of 41 years, right? Its mass is much lower than the one we were looking at before. It's about 60% that of the sun, right? And it's got an age of 1,870 million years. So this is much, much older than Sirius. Okay, now, having said that, I'm going to look at this next bright star over here, which is Arcturus. And Arcturus is the fourth brightest star in the sky. But it, too, is a little bit different from anything else. I'll bring up a photo. Immediately, you can see its colour is different. It's not a blue star. It's a yellowy-orange star. And its distance is just under 37 light years. All right? But there's amazing things about this when we look at Arcturus. All right? It's cooler than the sun. That's why it's got a yellow or orange colour, but it's 170 times brighter. Right? Although it's 170 times brighter, its mass is only slightly greater than that of the sun. Right? But its age is 7.1 billion years.
So it's heading towards dying.
Yes, it's much older, almost twice the age of our solar system.
It's running
system.
Out of fuel.
And what's happened was, once upon a time, it would have been with a mass of 1.0, just over 1, it would have been very similar to the sun a long, long time ago. And then as it ran out of hydrogen at the centre, the energy began to be used up more and more rapidly, and it turned into what we call a red giant.
So our sun's going to look like that one day?
Right. Well, look, I've just pulled up a picture of Arcturus and the sun to scale. All right? But remember, Arcturus, a few billions of years, would have looked very similar to the sun, right? And eventually it's going to turn into this red giant, and then it will puff all the matter away, and what will be left is a white dwarf.
Yeah.
Right? So there you go. So imagine standing on the surface of our sun. You see, Arcturus is a key to what our sun will look like in a few billions of years. So in 4 billion years from now, our sun will turn into a red giant.
It'll get that bloated.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, it will do. Okay, so there's a nice photograph of our Stonehenge in 4 billion years from now. Okay, but once the sun becomes a red giant, it will look a little bit different. Okay, it will look something like that. The entire surface of the Earth will melt when our sun turns into a red giant. So this is stars like animals and creatures go through a life sequence, right? But of course, our life expectancy is so short compared to that of a sun, they appear almost timeless, as in, you know. Yeah, there you go. Okay, and then looking up higher up, just above Arcturus, we've got Spica, which is the 16th brightest star in the sky. And what you immediately notice, it's blue in colour. So this tells you it's hotter than the sun. And there it is, its distance is 260 light years. And its luminosity, how bright it is almost 23,000 times that of the sun. So this is a ferociously hot star.
Yeah.
But again, what we notice is that, in detail, we find that it's actually not one star, but two stars, which are orbiting around each other, almost in contact. The period of rotation is just 4 days. And the distance between the two stars is just, virtually they're making contact. Okay?
Are they closing in on each other? Okay. Some of those ones close in on each other and combine.
Change. And on the picture shown here, shows you that mass is being ejected as mass is flowing from one star to another.
I see, that's what's causing that.
Yeah, and so matter is being hurled out. If we could look close, it would be something like a close binary system like this. And the brighter of the two is 20,000 times brighter than the sun. It's about 100 times more brighter than its companion, right? Yes. But its age, as I've put there, is only 12 and a half million years.
Will they end up joining together?
Quite possibly.
Yes.
Could do, but also if that happened, almost certainly that would result in a supernova explosion.
Yeah,
so we're expecting this to turn into a supernova.
Because you're changing the classification of the star pretty rapidly if there's suddenly another star's worth of stuff there.
Yeah. So 12 and a half million on the age of stars is, this is a baby star, isn't it? You know what I mean? Yeah.
But as you say, you know, the big blue giant stars, they go through their fuel a lot faster.
Yeah.
So they don't have the life expectancy of the smaller stars.
No.
Yeah.
And but the importance of these things is when they explode, I mean, how many people have got gold on their fingers, yeah?
Yeah.
Gold is rare. Why? Because it's only produced by blue giants when they turn supernova, and that's why they're rare.
Yeah.
We see, as we've gone through this thing, we've picked out lots of giant stars, and this is because in our night sky, the giants stand out. Over light years, they're still bright, but the common or, garden variety of stars, they're faint. You know, and the sun a few light years away would just be lost from sight amongst the other stars.
Yeah.
But stars like Spica stand out over light years because they're so big and bright. Okay, finally, now what I'd like to pick out for you is that looking down below, you can see the sickle there and Leo, and just at the nose of the sickle, right, there's a little area there which you have some faint stars, but if you look with the binoculars, you'll find it's an absolutely amazing object there. I'll bring it up for you. There it is there. And this is what we call the beehive cluster. And it's a cluster of 50 young stars, and its distance is 520 light years. And a telescope, this is absolutely magnificent. But looking at this photograph, folks, the first thing you'll notice is that the dominant bright stars, they are blue giants, aren't they?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. They're all blue giants. And a couple of them have turned into red giants, you can see with the yellowish colour there, right?
Yes.
But it's very young, you know, very young. And all stars are formed in clusters, right? And if you get out a pair of binoculars and scan across the Milky Way, you'll soon pick up lots and lots of clusters. Right? So stars are formed not singularly, clusters. And our sun was formed in a cluster 4.5 billion years ago.
Yeah.
And astronomers have been looking for our brothers and sisters, and they just recently found a couple of them, which their chemical makeup is virtually identical to the sun, indicating that they must be companions. Yeah.
And it's possible that those those siblings of the sun also have planets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Almost certainly. And, of course, this is, as I say, we're on the verge of major discoveries now because what we begin to pick up is these planets around other stars, other worlds. We're going to be learning more and more about it. And, of course, the big thing that people have always been interested in is intelligent life out there. But that, I think, has to be a subject for another meeting, won't it?
Indeed.
Looking at that in detail. Maybe you should make that a topic of looking at extraterrestrial life and so on. One of our things coming
up.
It'd
be a challenge to get it in the time frame.
Yes. All right, we'll see what we can do.
You might have to make two ones out of it.
Yeah, okay, folks, look, we're close up
there.
Oh,
we're actually on Wednesday to Sunday this time.
Yes, I knew I'd changed one of them. I got it right. I'm just going to change the other one. Okay. So remember, folks, if you're interested, you can just come out to Stonehenge and ours are open. But if you want a tour or a night thing, you need to phone up Kay and speak to her about that. So with that,
well, go on the website and book in yourself. All you've got to do is click to where book now on whatever you're interested, and it'll take you through to the booking system.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. Okay, and so we'll catch up with you in the very near future. Goodbye, everyone. Yeah, Kay's going to say something.
You got the wrong web page.
I've got the what?
The web page is www.stonehenge-aotearoa.nz.
Okay, see, I keep doing things wrong. Hello.
It will redirect to the right one.
Anyway, I'm going to shut up, folks, and we'll catch up with you in the near future.